Hey, discos. Need a little more Disgraceland in your life? Just a touch to get you through? Yeah, me too. This is the podcast that comes after the podcast. Welcome to Disgraceland, the after party. Welcome to Disgraceland, the after party, a new mini show I'll be bringing to you off of the cuff on a bi-weekly basis to help bridge the gap between Disgraceland episodes. I'm going to use this mini spin-off show to briefly discuss the most recent episodes of Disgraceland, Disgraceland subjects who are in the news, and to share extra content, deleted scenes, and ideas for future episodes. And finally, I'll be answering the occasional email and provide context on music I'm listening to, books I'm reading, and other culture I'm devouring at the moment, as this seems to be a constant question. Jake, what are you listening to? What are you reading, watching, etc.? All right, let's get into it. Episodes 30 and 31 covered XXXTentacion and Amy Winehouse, respectively. And XXXTentacion made some news this past week. I covered a lot of drama in the X episode, but it seems that there's no end to the drama surrounding this artist. The mother of X's child was granted the right to acquire a DNA sample from the dead hip-hop star, and that was reported this week. Genesis Sanchez, XXXTentacion's baby mama, is trying to establish paternity for her son. X's mom, Cleopatra Bernard, has been trying to prevent this from happening. Why, we don't know. It seems to me that you'd want to know whether or not you were actually a grandmother. I don't know. It's just, you know, how I would do it. Anyways, my guess is that this has something to do with money and the rights to future X royalties. Genesis Sanchez claims to have dated and lived with X and that she gave birth to his baby in January of 2019. And this is a fact that nobody seems to deny, so it's unclear why X's mom wants to block a DNA test. Side note, Genesis is set to testify in X's murder trial, and prosecutors claim to have new evidence against the three men accused of killing XXXTentacion, and that Genesis herself has contributed to this new evidence. I'm going to keep watching this sordid train wreck of a story. And like I said before, I covered a lot of drama in this episode on XXXTentacion, including the artist's complicated relationships with women, the physical abuse, the suicide, the murder. And it appears that there's no end to the drama surrounding this guy. Amy Winehouse. All right, this is the biggest episode for Disgraceland yet. And the response has been incredible. Thank you guys so much. I'm glad you guys are hyped on it, and I loved writing it and researching it, especially the bit about Camden nightlife, where Amy was from and where she made her bones, and all the amazingly talented musicians who she surrounded herself with during that time. Peaches and Mark Ronson, Russell Brand, who wasn't a musician and didn't make it into the episode, but was definitely around during that time. And of course, the Libertines. And it appears that Pete Daugherty of the Libertines has made some news lately too. He's got new unreleased material and is playing shows, and apparently he's not sucking. And also, he's openly proclaiming his love of drugs. Yeah, Pete's a real rock star who refuses to straighten up and fly right. God bless him for it. But I do hope he keeps himself clean enough to stay alive. Wasted talent is a drag. And either way, I see a Pete Daugherty episode of Disgraceland in the future, so keep an eye on this. All right, back in a second. Rolling Stones. I love the Rolling Stones. You know this. It's 2019. And that means it was 50 years ago that the Stones' disastrous music festival at Altamont Speedway took place. The show where the Hells Angels were hired to run security, and the show that ended with the death of an 18-year-old fan. And this is the story I put together to tell at the first Disgraceland live show that took place this past Friday in Boston. And it's the same story I'm telling in Denver on May 25th. And tickets are still available. You can get them on my website. The live show is the Disgraceland podcast brought to life with super immersive sound design, video, and light direction. I'm doing my best to put you in the moment that I'm describing with all the creepy vibes that are going on. Here's a sneak peek of the Altamont story. The Cadillac Fleetwood, certainly designed for more elegant journeys than this, climbed a final hill and then coasted down the other side into the dark, dusty valley. And there, From behind tinted windows, Mick and Keith got their first look at the scene. And there was little to no organization. 50,000 fans, a fraction of the amount that would arrive by showtime, filled with pre-show excitement. Mostly teenagers set up in makeshift campsites in the dark, huddled around smoky fires to keep warm, all there almost a full day early for the concert. Dogs roamed freely, scrounging for food, barking indiscriminately. Hungry, cold babies trembled and cried. Cars and vans were parked everywhere and every which way. Along the edges of the hills lay those rusted-out bodies of junked cars, silhouetted in the hellish glare of the bonfire that had sprung up dangerously close to the production scaffolding. A menacing skeleton that reached up into the filthy, charcoal-smudged early morning sky. It was clear from the jump, Altamont was no Woodstock. Keith looked on in astonishment. What were they about to embark upon? Just what in the fuck was life in 1969? And who in the hell were the Rolling Stones? Keith mumbled something about entering the mouth of hell. Mick banged on the partition, signaling the driver to stop. He looked at Keith and said, "It's time." Keith grabbed his coat, a well-worn leather greatcoat that in another life had been the property of one of Hitler's Nazi officers. Keith slipped it on, exited the limo behind his frontman, and the two of them strolled out into the coming day's battlefield. Mick and Keith began slowly making their way through the grounds in search of whatever the Speedway clubhouse might be. They stepped carefully over sleeping bodies, blankets, shards of metal, and couples who'd had too much weed or wine or acid or all of the above. It was surprisingly cold, and the early festival goers, weary of venturing too far off of the grounds and into the domain of the mountain lions and coyotes, began tearing apart the little available festival fencing there was for firewood. The light from the flames guided Mick and Keith. Murmurs from the weary and stoned fans started burbling up. Soon, a small crowd had filled in behind them as they made their way toward the belly of the Speedway. A boy, couldn't have been older than 14, hurried himself from the back and aligned himself to Keith's right. Keith now had a walking stick in his left hand. The boy had a lit joint, a pinner. He said nothing to Keith, just pulled on the grass and passed it to his hero at his left. The two of them, in steady motion, Keith grabbed the joint, puffed, and passed it to Mick to his left. The boy said nothing, just kept walking. Keith did the same. The three of them, the boy included, cool as fuck. I loved putting this story together. Really hoping you get a chance to see it live. If you're in or around Denver on May 25th, get your ticket now at disgracelandpod.com/tour and come out and say hi. All right, back in a minute.
We'll be right back after this word.
Johnny Cash, the man in black, is coming at you in next week's episode on May 28th. And this was an especially hard episode to write because there was so much material. There's so many dark, true life tales about Johnny Cash that I wouldn't be surprised if I eventually end up writing a 10-episode series on the guy. I'm pretty sure there's the material to support it. So I wanted to play for you guys a clip from next week's episode and hopefully get you as pumped on it as I am. So here you go. Johnny Cash was dead on the floor, and it was all Ronnie Hawkins' fault. Ronnie Hawkins, the hard-driving Canadian rockabilly hellraiser, singer of the Hawks, the man who told his young guitarist Robbie Robertson in his pitch to get him to join his band, "You won't make much money, but you'll get more pussy than Sinatra," had, it seemed, drunk and drugged his friend Johnny Cash into an early grave, pretty much to the surprise of no one. Despite Johnny's attempt at sobriety and fidelity a couple months prior, he was back to his old ways. All right, that's all you get. I'm stoked on this episode. Again, it's coming next week on May 28th. I listened to a lot of Beatles in prep for the Johnny Cash episode. You'll hear why when you hear the story as the Beatles figure prominently into it. Which brings me to the part of the show where I'm going to talk to you about what I'm listening to, what I'm reading, and what I'm watching. And people ask me these questions constantly, and the truth is that there are two types of influences that I have. There's the research influence, the things I'm researching for the story that I'm about to tell. You know, it's sort of the, you know, who is the artist? What kind of music were they making? What were they listening to? What was influencing them? You know, and then there's the other type of influence. It's the music, the television, the books, all the stuff that I'm listening to, that I'm absorbing, that I'm watching, and that's influencing me in ways that I'm not even really aware of. And most of my writing comes from these influences. A lifetime of devouring books and movies, and I've never stopped. I'm always listening, I'm always watching, I'm always reading, and I'm always getting turned on to things randomly. And some of the things I'm listening to right now, Roxy Music, probably because of their recent induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Check out the album Stranded from 1973, particularly the songs Street Life and Mother of Pearl. I'm once again into the album Easy Does It by Eazy-E and listening to Dr. Dre find his way to his own genius. I'm into this record right now, obviously, because I'm deep into research for the two-part NWA episode that I'm going to launch season four with in July. A friend of mine recently turned on to an artist named Carl Blau, B-L-A-U. That's Carl with a K, K-A-R-L, Carl Blau, B-L-A-U. He's a modern Northwestern singer-songwriter. He's got a real kind of Fred Neil, Dan Penn thing going on. If those dudes were 25 and making records in 2019. They're not, but they're the shit, and so is Carl, and he's making records in the here and now. And they sound new and fresh and moody and like they were made with real instruments, but for modern times. And there isn't anything that sounds particularly retro about it, which is saying something for a dude who rocks a cowboy hat and fringe Western shirts. So check out Carl Blau. I just checked my recently played section on Spotify. It's telling me that I recently listened to the American Psycho soundtrack. And that's because I caught Bret Easton Ellis's Rules of Attraction on cable the other night. And no matter how hard I try, Bret's writing, his books, films, etc., they find their way back to me. In Rules of Attraction, there's that incredible scene where the character of Victor details his summer abroad, traipsing through Europe, doing drugs and having wild sex. And that montage in the film was actually made as a separate movie by Roger Avery, who made that movie based on the Bret Easton Ellis novel. And Avery condensed it into a 3-minute montage, or 3 to 5 minutes, something like that, because he couldn't get permission to use the real-life Europeans who were caught up in his Cassavetes run-and-gun shooting style. And what Avery ended up with, though, is glorious and iconic. So many films and commercials have ripped off this montage, this film within a film that's known as Victor Takes a Trip. I wanted to do the same thing, so I found the script online, and I wrote my piece of my episode on Brian Jones, and I matched it beat for beat, but with different words, to the Victor Takes a Trip script. And, you know, I replaced Brian Jones in the late 60s in place of Victor in the late 90s. And I tracked Brian Jones' trip through America and through Europe and his demise into drug use and eventual ouster from the Rolling Stones. And I used this Roger Avery Rules of Attraction creative thing, this film within a film, as sort of a model. This is my way of paying homage to it. And it was a lot of fun. It was a blast to record. I love it. And it's from episode 18 of Disgraceland entitled Brian Jones, To Be On Your Own Like a Sinking Stone. And here's the whole clip. Took a charter flight on a 747 to London, landed at Heathrow, took a cab to the city center. Don't let Mick Jagger lie to you, being famous is not for the ugly. I was staying at Kensington House, the most beautiful hotel in the world. Dylan and Robbie are too. We smoke hash, jam, call a couple of friends who take me to all places, Denmark Street. I flirted a bit at Zeno's, buy some books, and then follow some girls with mod hair. I wandered around trying to get laid until it started to rain, and then went back to the Marquee. Trad Night is dead, so I go to Bag of Nails, but it's all guitarists. I find the one American chick, and we dry hump on the dance floor. We cab it back to Kensington House, I strip her clothes off, suck her toes, and we fuck. Hung out for 4 or 5 days, met the world's greatest guitarist, Jimi Hendrix, kept missing calls from Mick and Keith. Wrote my dad a postcard I never sent. Stood trial for last year's drug bust in front of a judge with hard eyes. Smoked a lot of hash and the trial gets postponed. Got paranoid, got weird, tried jumping out a window, got committed. It was boring, I'm annoyed, I split for the US with Hendrix. His band doesn't do acid, so I dosed Noel Redding on the plane. He loses his mind on a flight to California. We land, I insist on visiting a sex show, smoke a lot of hash. I meet an American TV actress and we drink absinthe at a bar called Absinthe. Monterey Pop was cool, lots of Stones fans in the backstage was intense. Wandered around trying to pick up Grace Slick, ended up with Nico. Snort coke with Dennis Hopper and Peter Fonda until I found some blonde with big tits that reminds me of Anita. I gave her $100, in the end she pulls me out and I come between her tits even though I'm so high I'm barely hard. Afterward we make small talk about venereal disease, her pimp and herself. I wake to the sound of Jerry Garcia singing, it's 8 a.m. in hottest places. I pretend to like it but Jerry sounds like piss. Trade songs to Janis Joplin, then split for London by plane. Wander around the airport before locating my driver. It's only 7 p.m., my relationship with Keith is broken. Got the hang of copping, heroin is everywhere. Went to a Ford model party, hooked up with a Romanian model named Karina. She chugs my cock back at the Hilton, which is good. played billiards, went shopping. I think she gave me craps. Drove an Aston Martin that belonged to George Harrison. Made out with an Apple secretary in front of Abbey Road. Saw Mick at the live broadcast of All You Need Is Love with the Beatles. Alan Klein invites us to New York. We fly commercial and stay at the Waldorf. New York swings like you can't imagine. Hendrix lets me jam with him in the Village. New York girls are tough like Berber whores. I swap hickeys with a drunk woman after brushing my hair and calling me Mr. UK. She strips me in the bathroom of the club. Sneak into a cathedral and steal chartreuse so good my dick goes hard. I fly to Barcelona, which is a low rent bus. Too many fat American tourists, too many lame pencil necks. I dropped acid at the Sagrada Familia, which is a trip to say the least. Cruise up the coast with Salvador Dali, but had no more acid, which sucked. Suki from London wires my hotel. I tell her to ignore making Keith's calls. Canta Cruz is beautiful, but there are no girls there, just young hippies. So I went to Switzerland, where ironically I couldn't find anyone with time. Took FO Railway to the Shilton, which is beautiful in a way I can't describe. Took a train into Italy and ended up in Venice, where I met a hot girl who looks like Marianne Faithful and speaks better English than I do. She's living for a year on only $1 a day. We gondola around, buy some hash. She thinks I'm a capitalist because my hotel room costs more for one night than she's spending her entire trip. She doesn't mind so much when I pay the bills. I ditch her and hook up with a couple who obviously want a threesome. Too much tension there with the geek officer driving to Rome and offer I jump at. I'm too stoned to arrange for travel. The wife turns out to be a freak. The guy starts to freak out on me. It's like a Polanski film. We stop for a while in Florence where I see some big dome. I'm so high and I lose the weird couple, which is probably for the best. Ended up in Morocco, which is hot, sexy, and dirty, just like Rome, but with music. I track down Jujuka players who are ridiculously good. I try to record them for 2 hours, but it's too hot and the tape machine doesn't want to work. I meet 200-age Italian girls who I try to talk into fucking while I jack off into them. Or to buy them some hash instead. My drug trial is coming up, so I do more drugs. I bump into some guy from Dartford who says he's Mick Jagger, but I'm sure he's a poof, so I go to London. The band is surprised to see me. The music they're working on is a shit Peppers ripoff. I pass out and dream about Elmore James when I wake up and propped on pillows. Sitar on my lap. I tell Mick he can go fuck Keith. I don't know what it means, but I shake with paranoia, strum the sitar in the booth, and check out. I make my way back to Tangiers with Suki, hang in the hills, sacrifice a goat with the locals at a pan rights fest, get annoyed with Suki and beat her to near death, flew back to London to await trial for possession, pleaded guilty, judge has mercy, fined £50, attend the rock and roll circus filming and get lost in wardrobe for a full day and I can't find my way out. I watch John Lennon's new girlfriend freak out Chuck Berry, Mick scraps the whole thing. We get stoned and I record percussion on Midnight Rambler and the next morning I wake up talking to myself. I retire to Christopher Robinson's home in the country. I get my drugs but barely make any music. Back here, without a band, I no longer know who I am and I feel like a ghost of a total stranger.
So yeah, that's my homage to Rules of Attraction, which I recently watched for the millionth time. And the other night I watched Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. The hell kind of name is Grindelwald? I don't know. I watched this because it was Mother's Day and my wife knew that there was the only way in hell I was going to watch this movie with her. I can't get into magic or superhero movies and there just aren't any stakes. And, you know, it's whenever, oh, this dude's going to kill us. This doesn't matter. Wave your magic wand or wipe out half of a metropolis with your superpower and voila, problem solved. Anyway, I can't get into this stuff, but I did watch it and it was okay. You know, I don't know. Not my thing. I also started watching Joe Swanberg, the King of Mumblecore, so-called anyways. I watched his Netflix show, Easy. I'm surprised by how much I'm loving it. Mark Maron and whoever the dude from Veep is who plays Jonah, they're both amazing in it, as is the whole cast. It's an incredible series. Easy on Netflix. Speaking of Veep, holy shit, the series just wrapped and it did not disappoint. This is probably my favorite show on television right now. It's actually not on television anymore. Like I said, the series just had their finale. Veep is incredible. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is just on another level. So check out Veep. All right. That is what I'm listening to, what I'm watching, and what I'm reading. I didn't get to what I'm reading because what am I reading? I'm just researching NWA, man. I'll get into that in a later episode. All right. We'll be back at you in a second with some listener emails and me reading the phone book. Back in flash. Okay. Email of the week is from Chelsea H. Chelsea says, I'm a rather new listener. I picked up on your awesome podcast after listening to Real Radio Show 104.1 out of Orlando. What's up, Orlando? I love your podcast, but I need something else to kill time when I run out of episodes. Do you have any references for me as far as other podcasts go? Well, thanks for listening, Chelsea, and for writing. Well, you can listen to this new podcast, Disgraceland After Party. This is literally why I'm making this, to get you through to new Disgraceland episodes. And also, if you're sick of me, check out Ron Burgundy's podcast and also Aaron Mankey's Lore. All right, side note real quick. I almost forgot. Are you guys following this Cardi B news? Who wants a Cardi B episode? I want a Cardi B episode. Can we do a Cardi B episode? Maybe season 4. I don't know. Keep watching this. Send me any Cardi B news you get. All right, I'm going to end these shows reading the phone book. Why? Because so many of you have commented on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc. You could listen to me read the phone book. Really? Could you now? I don't understand what this means, but I figured I'd give it a shot and test it. Bonus, turns out there are some amazingly interesting vintage phone books out there, like this one, the Telephone Directory from the Mountain States Telephone and Telegraph Company from the fall of 1958, covering Beaver, Cedar City, Enterprise, Hurricane, Kanab, Milford, Millersville, Parowan, St. George, and Springdale. Page 20, Lassiter to Wright, Hurricane, Lassiter, Darrell, D., ME 5-4494, Lauriston, Florence, E., ME 5-2535, Leverkin Feed and Hardware Company, Leverkin, ME 5-2552, skipping down to the M's, Miller, Ray, L., Leverkin, ME 52825, Model Cleaners, ME 5-4453, Mosdell, Charles, ME 5-2873, Mountain States Telephone and Telegraph Company, Business Office, 104 East Tabernacle Street, George. Dial O for operator, ask for business office. Long distance, dial O for operator, ask for long distance. Information, dial O for operator, ask for information. Repair service, dial O for operator, ask for repair service. Moyes, JW, ME 5-2268. Munford, Roberge, G, ME 5-2558.
Quit talking and start mixing.
Cut it!